At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
What's happening, guys? Happy Friday! And thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. The UFC 307 fallout is continuing, and coming up on today's episode, Amanda Nunes wants a call from Dana White. Will she get it? Plus, Conor McGregor allegedly is in Las Vegas. I'm going to give you my thoughts on that, and I also spoke to Uncle Liev. A lot to get to, everybody. Let's begin here. Alex Pierre with John Jones. Can't get around that, right, guys? And the pound-for-pound list is a very important list to the fighters, not to anybody else. But to the fighters, it does matter. I mean, you saw Khabib and John Jones go at it. Just to have their name on a page under something that says P4P, like, you got to explain to people what P4P even means. Like, I mean, like, to tell you the level of ridiculousness, there's no tournament. There's no prize money. There's no belt. There's no way to actually prove it. There's no structure and there's no architecture. But I mean, in this sport, we will follow the rules that we make up as we go. Like, I don't begrudge the list. I would have liked to have been number one on the list for longer than I was. I only got it for 1 week. And I just share this because the list has come out. Dana has been fighting publicly. Got an argument with Kevin Ioli, which spawned to a couple of times where Dana was having to defend his position against a couple of other guys. Dana was very adherent to the idea John Jones is number one pound for pound. And it was always a debate between John and Islam. When I say always a debate, I mean when Kevin Ioli got this going with Dana the first time. Kevin's got it going with him two or three times now, but when he got it going, it was with Islam. And the list has come out today, and this might surprise you, but Pereira is in front of John Jones. Does that surprise you? It's very hard when you're looking at a 55-pounder. Or it's very hard when you're looking at, when Demetrius Johnson was king, Demetrius is doing moves that are only in video games. I mean, what Demetrius did to Ray Borg, quite literally, at the time that he did it, the time that he did it is equally as the move. Where Demetrius is behind him, he picks him up and he returns him to the mat, and as he's doing that, he throws on an armbar and taps him out. The fact that he did it at the end of the fight that he already had wrapped up, all he had to do is run out the clock, but he's still looking to finish guys. I mean, yes, he becomes number one. But it's tough to take that into account, right? Because you're looking at that and going, okay, but there will never be a circumstance where even the greatest heavyweight, Fedor Emelianenko, there was never a time when Fedor could have done that move. He's just too big. The opponent is just too big. Too big to get pick up and to slam down. And when you're doing, you move your body there. So how do you take that into account? And the typical answer, the historical answer, is you give it to the guy that is able to do the move. It's what the entire pound for pound, or at least a portion of that, is literally about. Okay. It goes Islam, Pereira, Jones. Just so you know. I'm moving Islam out just because I wanted to discuss Pereira Jones. But when you have these weight discrepancies, it does become a little bit more philosophical, which is fun. The whole thing is mythical and philosophical. There's not an actual tournament, but it's fun. When you put Pereira head-to-head with John Jones, and you put him in front of John Jones, that's interesting. That is really interesting. There is an argument going on publicly with the boss that says it should not go Islam-Jones. It should go Jones-Islam. That argument has lasted 3 weeks. And now it doesn't go Islam-Jones, but it also doesn't go Jones-Islam. Jones has moved down one, and they moved a guy from John's weight class. John, the greatest light heavyweight ever. They're now saying, is competing at the same time with a greater light heavyweight ever. Can you imagine this claim? Are you understanding how big of a deal this is? So the entire argument that the boss has publicly come out, I don't think Dana's ever weighed in on a pound-for-pound list. Not recently. I do remember a time that St. Pierre was one and Anderson was four, and Dana said, you got that wrong, and they listened to him, and they moved Anderson to one, and they moved St. Pierre down to two. I do remember that, but guys, I just went back to 2009 for that statement. Dana's publicly come out, and he said his opinion on John. Not only did he not win, put another guy in there. And it's a little easier to break down John and Pierre, and I think that you have to give benefit of the doubt to John. And I think you would have to show grace and even nostalgia to John. But, and that's just because of being dynamic. That's just because of grounding, pounding guys out. That's because of going to decisions. That's because of finishing guys with the feet. That's because of going to TKOs. John has won every possible way that you can win. Piera has never even gone to a decision that I'm aware of, not in championship fights. I know that he and Blachowicz, I'm saying, but not in championship fights. He has never submitted anybody or even tried. He's won one way. He knocked him out. But then as you look at that list a little closer, you go, well, that's the ultimate way. If I'm from a wrestling background, a pin is greater than a major decision. That's just the way it is. So if Piera is finishing more guys, the number one way that you can finish guys, even though he's got goose eggs in these other categories, maybe you do score that for him and not against him. Do you see where it gets interesting? Do you see where it becomes a debate and it gets philosophical? Now, let's look at Piera's side. Because if you're talking about who's more dynamic, who can do more, who's more likely to go enter Abu Dhabi tomorrow, who's more likely to be able to go and enter the Olympic trials tomorrow in wrestling, right? Like in multiple sports, it's clearly John. But that's not how this game is played. If I was to ask you straight up, do you believe that John could get Roundtree out of there in 20 minutes? You might say, yeah. But if I said, do you believe that John could get Prochazka out of there twice in less than a combined 12 minutes? You would say no. And if I said, do you believe that John could get Jamal out of there in less than 5 minutes, you would say no. So if I was to ask you, do you believe that John would sign up and sign off on, train for, prepare, and make the walk for 4 5-round fights in 15 months, you would say no. You would say no, I don't believe that the durability or the drive or whatever it takes to go and do that, the love of the sport, whatever it was, but your answer would be no. And so there is an argument for Piera, not to mention if they just fought, it was head-to-head competition, right? It's one of the... But it's a surprising time. It's just not generally how we do that. There's nothing about Piera's story that is normal. Piera is the most inexperienced guy that fought on the card on Saturday. Not only has he had less fights than anybody on the entire card, guys, he's had less fights than the majority of the card had when they were still in the amateurs. He's had less completed rounds. He's had less literal minutes and seconds than anyone else that was on that card. And that's a very fascinating thing. It really is. To watch him coming up and watching him get recognized in this regard. It's a very interesting thing to see him in front of John Jones on a list when they were the same weight class, which is, by the way, a weight class that John could still get down to. And by the way, a weight class that Piera is still willing to move up to. I mean, I haven't seen anything bring John and Piera closer together than this new pound-for-pound list. Now, if you're a civilized human being, not a complete nerd, you don't even know where to find one of these things. But if you are a nerd, you probably find that interesting. And there is nothing that just happens in politics, just so you know, ever. It's all well planned. Piera is in front of John Jones in the pound for pound rankings. You need to hear what I'm saying, and you need to understand what I'm not saying. You want to talk about a guy that's doing everything right, and there is nothing done until it's done. There's a story, guys, I've told you this five times, and five times, you've asked me who I'm talking about, and I don't know. I leave out the name, it's not Scott Hall, and it's not Hillbilly Jim, I thought it was, and I can't recall who it is, but he got inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame. So he gets the phone call. It's on the announcement. They got the arena set up. They got the B-roll. They got his time in the show. They got his family in there. Everything's going to happen. Something happened on his way to the Hall of Fame. The night of, he was in town. He slept in the hotel right across the street. He's got to go down. He's got to cross the street. Something happened. He didn't cross the street. He didn't walk into the building. They did not induct him into the Hall of Fame. Not that night and not to this day. Like, you could do an honorary. I was supposed to go out to a Hall of Fame. Jerry Briscoe helped me with it. My coach died. Ron Finley died. I got to stay. I go to the funeral. And Jerry was very upset with me. He was upset with me. And then he found out what had happened, and he forgave me. But they inducted me into the Hall of Fame. They played a video montage. I'm just sharing with you, like, the idea that nothing is done until it's done. You've got to operate under that. Now, Uncle Liev has the good fortune of having the manager in our space. The guy. Ali. And Ali is never going to not operate under the example that I just gave you, which is nothing is done. But, boy, is Uncle Liev doing a good job. Because, see, he's got competition. And what I admire about Ali and Uncle Liev in this situation is that they understand that while the rest of the world does not. Every 205-pounder has stood back. All of them. Rachik, who is as nasty of a guy as you're going to find. Rachik, because he lost his last fight, does not feel like within him, within his code as a man. He does not feel he has the right to call out Piera. But I'll speak for Rachik because he's got the skills to beat him. Rachik can beat everybody. He is so good. He is so misunderstood. Even his last fight, if you go look at the result, you didn't watch the fight and know about everything that he dealt with going into it, you're going to be misled. But he follows that code. Rachik's not calling anybody out. Rachik would have every right to be speaking up and say, hey, hold on, not so fast. Before you anoint Uncle Liev, it's the winner of my fight against Uncle Liev. I will be fighting Pierre, but he can't do it. He can't bring himself to do it because he has a code. And because the last one didn't go as well, are you following me on this? Because every 205-pounder has stood back, including the guy that's going to be in the fight, to determine who advances to Piera. Even Rachik himself is staying back, focused on trying to take care of the competition, and every other 205-pounder has literally, you can go Google, you won't find a name, you won't find a guy joking around. You won't find anything. So why is Uncle Liev on top of it? Why is Uncle Liev out there tweeting? Why did I get a message from Uncle Liev this morning? Why? Because nothing's done. And it's not just a competition right now of 205-pounders. Alex Piera is in a highly unusual situation where the guy that he's called, he was set off fight Uncle Liev. He didn't call Uncle Liev out. The guy that he called out is a world champion, not just a top contender. And his name is Dreykus du Plessis at a weight class that Piera, of course, has a claim to. And he's calling out and having people like me. Now I'm on to Alex Piera, having people like me call for a fight against Tom Aspinall. So all of a sudden, Uncle Liev is number one contender, right? Like, number one contender is all you need. The clear number one contender, it's all you need. It's all you've ever needed. the other boys in the locker room to stand back and know that it's your time to walk through. That is all you need. It's all you've ever needed. Until right now. Number one contender is the least decorated of the bunch. Tom Aspinall is the second least decorated of the bunch. You got an undisputed champion in Dreykus Duplessis. Right? I mean, like any other time where all I've got to do and all the achievements I have, I've got to be ranked one, recognized as one, get everybody else to sit down and shut up. If that has ever happened, you're fighting for the title. But it's not like that now. Uncle Live is still going to have to look good and perform in a certain way. So the fact that he's going for it, the fact that he's going out, the fact that I did hear from him today amongst other people, I really like that. I really appreciated that. I appreciate that understanding. I appreciate that respect shown to the sport. I argue for you that Merab, in the passenger seat of the O'Malley Seville, did a really great job. Most guys would just get there, and then they would do nothing. They did this to Demetrius Johnson for so long, they thought about cutting the division. It wasn't Demetrius' fault. It's the passenger. I bring the belt. You bring the promotion. You bring the interest. You bring the entertainment. I've done my part. Like, this rig doesn't move down the road without me. I'm the champion. Who's going to be in the passenger seat is the only thing in question. I'm just bringing that to you. Like, Uncle Liev's doing a really good job, and he is making that really interesting. And by the way, when I heard from Uncle Liev, this was public. This wasn't a private message, but I had made a comment that Uncle Liev is not a wrestler, that you guys keep doing that to him. You keep saying that he's a wrestler. He's very good at wrestling. He's not a wrestler. If you asked him, what are you representing? What is it you're most proud of? He is a kickboxer, just like Khabib with Sambo or Fedor with Sambo. For example, like, they get to choose and come forward and say what it is that they represent. And the world has come out to say that Uncle Liev represents wrestling, and he's just going to try to take him down. And what a boring fight that's going to be. No, he's not. He's going to go and trade with him and thinks that he can beat him, which is interesting. And you guys would like to see if you can fix the story and the narrative. And that was just when Uncle Liev given me a response today, this is what he was responding to. I thought that you guys would want to know that. But either way, much like Merab held up his end of the bargain when he walked into Sphere, just in case that belt's going to change hands and now he's in a position where he can also entertain you guys to a degree, like the driver of the car in that case O'Malley did, I just think that Uncle Liev is doing an interesting job here. And that whole crew, starting with Khabib, Ali's guilty of it too, though. Ali himself is guilty of it. Islam, okay? These guys are secretly very charming and they're secretly very funny. It doesn't come out. For the same reason that Rejcik won't let it out right now and he wants to so bad, and he believes he's going to beat Uncle Liev, and he believes he's going to be the guy, but he can't bring himself to say anything because he's got this code. I found Uncle Liev to be rather enjoyable myself. So let's see where that goes. But nothing's done till it's done, and you can't act like that. You can't have that attitude. I got a story. I'll leave names out of it. I got a story. You guys see him every week. You guys see him often, most weeks. He's part of the television crew. That's a very sought-after position. I think we could imagine why, right? It's very difficult to participate in this sport if you're not in there doing the sport. Can we agree? So you have one of these sought-after positions. And you might wonder sometimes, hey, how did he get that? Like, just curious, like, what is the process? If I wanted to try to do it, do I submit a resume? What do I do? Do I turn in a tape? Do I have to know somebody? You might wonder these things. There's somebody that you see on a regular basis that wasn't the guy that was supposed to be there. They brought him in while they interviewed the guy that was supposed to be there. But the guy that was supposed to be there had such an attitude that I'm the guy that's supposed to be here that they showed him the door, brought the other guy in. I mean, I'm just sharing with you. Like, there is something to be said for an attitude. There's something to be said for having the right attitude. And the number one thing in the UFC, all right, the number one thing Dana White's looking for is interesting. If you pitch him an idea and he says that word back to you, it means you did good. Interesting. Not money, not legacy, not action, not interesting. That's the word. And when you're in a situation like this, the number one thing that you can do to get interesting, to get Dana's interest, is to show a hunger. If you can show and convince him that you want it and you want it more than everybody else, that will move you in front of, have I done more than everybody else? Your resume versus their resume is generally what people have to go off of. But if you can convince him that you want it more than he does. And I feel that Uncle Liev, to a degree, and I make this whole thing to encourage him to keep doing it, but to a degree, he is really showing that not only does he have the resume, he also has the hunger. And if those two things come together, he will have a bout agreement and he will have his title fight. It's official. We are in fall. Guys, it is the busiest and best time of the year for team sports and sports fans. Look, you got the NFL. You got college football. You got NHL and MLB postseason. Don't be left out of the season by trying to run your e-commerce business all on your own. Let me introduce you to the perfect teammate, Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret that with Shop Pay, you can boost conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts are going abandoned and you're going to get more sales. Businesses that sell more simply sell on Shopify. We use Shopify over here at Bad Guy Inc. All of our merchandise, and it will not disappoint you. I want you to upgrade your business. I want you to sign up for a $1 per month trial period at Shopify.com/Chael. That's Shopify.com/Chael, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Chael to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Chael.
Professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, so focus is important. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, focus and quickly get through work with relevant real-time suggestions. And it works across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can sound more confident and persuasive wherever you write. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
Amanda Nunes, I've got to tell her congratulations right now. All right, she got me. She got me. She put out a piece for attention. I'm going to reference the piece. And I have to say it that way, like, not as a slide to her, but almost in a defense of myself before anybody comes out and goes, Chael, she's not serious. Like, yeah, I know. But let's attack it from the standpoint of the information we're given. Let's not attempt to get into the deeper psychology of Amanda. Let's just go off of what she said. She puts out a piece, and she looked very happy in it, by the way. She's in the gym. She got her workout gear on. Very relevant to the story. One of the most relevant parts is what she's wearing. You know, it comes up, and so her stomach is exposed, comes down above the knee. She's in fight gear. But I'm glad she was, because my goodness, she looked good. I mean, I am talking fit. You can't just look the way that she looked. There's an expression, and it's actually not true, but it's more true than it is false, which is you cannot out-train a bad diet. And I'm just sharing, like, to look the way and look as fit as she did, she has got to be thinking about nutrition to a degree, and she's got to be exercising heavily. So, relevant things, though, because Amanda's not small. Amanda was fighting at 145 pounds. She wasn't just waking up in the morning and going and getting on the scale. There was a discipline involved. And now we're talking about 135 pounds. I mean, it was one of my greatest questions when I hear about this, to what I dismiss and don't believe to be real. Is she aware 145 is gone? Because I don't think there was ever an official announcement, right? I think they just stopped doing 145 and all the 45-pounders got cut and released. I don't know that they ever came out and made an announcement. I'm generally wondering, like, does Amanda know that? 135 is where the action is at. Is she aware that on her first time back, she's going to have to do the number one thing that a fighter does not want to do, the number one thing that leads a fighter to retirement, which is she's going to have to cut weight? Simple question by me, but I wondered, does she know that? Has she considered that? And so I see this video of him and go, my goodness. I'm going to stop there. You can only go on and on about how good a girl looks before you, it starts to get weird. But guy, I mean, it's the whole reason that we say a picture is worth a thousand words. I look, I go, my goodness. Then she got this smile on her face. She got a glow on her eye. Like she was genuinely happy to be back and be back in front of you guys. But those are clues. If any one of those doesn't exist, including the excitement and the joy, it's not going to happen. She's not coming back for the money. She's not coming back for the acclaim. She's not coming back for a championship. If she returns, she puts her legacy on the line. She gets nothing. So it's very important that you, when you're trying to judge, is she serious? And she wasn't fully serious, by the way. Like, within the video, she's singing. She's doing a little singing along, which means she doesn't quite know the rules of the internet and how completely banned that is. But she's singing along. And then she's changing some of the words and she's acting them out. She's dancing, she's moving around, she's acting them out. And there's something in there where she's saying, Dana, call me. I have missed you so much. Dana, call me. And that's the part where you start to see the lack of sincerity. She has Dana's phone number. She could send Dana a message. And whether Dana scooped that right up and ran with it or just said, let's see what happens, but I got to get you in the pool. There's a lot of bureaucracy over here now. Let's at least get one of these steps done. I mean, I'm just sharing for you. She's at least to the part where she's going to come to you guys and present that she would like to be back. She's going to get the talk and the back and forth. And eventually Dana will be part of that. Hey, does this interest you? Okay, great. Well, how much does it interest you? All of these things have to happen. And one part that I'm not clear on, and again, all I know is she's lip singing and changing the words to Dana, call me, I've missed you so much. But it appears that what really get her feathers up is Kayla Harrison and nothing else. I think we would understand that. And if you want to talk about a girl's fight that can carry, it would be Kayla versus Amanda. Now, I know the girls think that's huge. I cannot guarantee you if they had that fight that it would be a main event, but it could. It could. It is far more likely to be a feature match, not a main event. I only offer that because this is not quite what they think that they have here. And by the way, if that's true, and the one thing that's going to get Amanda's feathers up is Kayla, you would need a championship first. You would just need a championship. And one of the problems that even Queen Amanda is going to face is Dana does not like one-offs. And he hates one-offs for the championship. So I'm just sharing, like, I don't know that Amanda has an interest in anything other than Kayla. And that can be a problem, guys. Now, if she does, if she's willing to take a full schedule, if she's coming back, and three fights will do, by the way. Full schedule, if you guarantee that you're going to do three fights, okay, great, you're back. But it would be interesting to have her prove it. A number of fighters will just know the right thing to say. And I'm not going to paint her with that brush, but I'm sharing with you. A number of fighters would just know the right things to say. Not many of them, but a few. But the litmus test is then would you come back first? If you're coming back, it's a world championship, and it's Kayla Harrison, but you're going to stick around, you're going to take a full schedule, then what difference does it make if I put you in a number one contenders match? And then we go on to the title matches. So all of a sudden you're playing this game, right? All of a sudden it's going back and forth. But a couple of takeaways, you know, hey, Dana, call me. Is she serious about that? No. She would make the phone call. But the belief that she only wants to come back for Kayla Harrison and that's what gets her up. Well, yes and no. It has most certainly appeared to be that way. And Amanda does not rear her head or surface in the form of callouts except for Kayla. But Kayla's the one that called Amanda out. So perhaps that's the part that gets her. Perhaps it's not the old teammate. It's not the narrative. It's not let me show everybody who the boss is. Perhaps it's as simple as she got called out. And if that's true, then that would lead you that, yeah, maybe Amanda will take a few matches because she's now been called out in front of the world in the form of Juliana Pena. So now she's got two girls calling her out. She goes her entire career with nobody calling her out. She goes into retirement. She's got two girls saying, I can beat you. Telling the world, I can beat you. Telling the world, stay in retirement. Don't come back. It's not like it was when you left, sister. Those are the kinds of things that get fighters off the couch. Now, if a fighter is waiting to be called, right, that's not going to happen. But if they are hungry and they would like to return, right? You can't come to Dana and tell Dana, I'm done. I'm dropping the belts and I'm walking out. And then saying, hey, call me. I'd love to come back. It doesn't work that way. If you're the one that did the breakup, you have the makeup call. You schedule the dinner. So where's the sincerity at? I don't know. But it doesn't have to fully be there yet. There's pieces and there's parts. And I can tell you by watching this, she was happy. She was fun. She was glad to be back in front of you guys. And by the way, she's got a discipline. This idea of coming back did not just jump into her head Saturday night. She's had this idea and she's been testing these waters for a while now. Speculation swirls. Conor McGregor going to be in town. By town, meaning Dana's town, Las Vegas. Dana asked if he plans to meet with Conor while Conor's in town. Dana simply said no. Speculation swirls. There's trouble in paradise. Maybe. It's not what I got out of that. I mean, why would one have to have anything to do with the other? What is Conor coming to town for? If his primary focus is not to come to town to meet with Dana, why would you even ask if Dana's going to meet with him? And moreover, if Conor didn't come to town to meet with Dana, which means something else takes priority, why would you expect that Dana would meet with him? And far more above all of that, what is it you possibly think they would have to discuss? And I do know fighters who've cost them careers. I know fighters that have joined the class action suit just because they couldn't get that meeting. But at the end of the day, what are we meeting about? I mean, you'd have to ask yourself if you're Dana, right? Like, I got a million things to do and I got to move this shit forward. Now, meeting with you is a bit of a favor. You called, you want to have the meeting. You're going to take time out of my day. Okay, great. But I'm working. So what is it that we have to discuss that is business? It's not the rules. It's not the weight class. It's not how many left on your contract. It's not what your participation is going to be. That's already all worked out in a contract. So if you're inviting me lunch to renegotiate the contract, let me take one guess. It's not to make things better for me. Like, you didn't call a meeting and say, hey man, I'm looking at this contract and I am really overpaid and it's bothering me. I just want to take a look at it. I saw what my numbers did. I know they're not what you thought. And just moving forward, we got to adjust and we got to bring this down about $50,000. Like, that isn't going to happen. So what is it that you would meet about? Now, if you're friends, If you're just being social, but that's not what a meeting is. That's called hanging out. They would hear you hanging out with Conor. Oh, which also would be a big fat no. But when the media is asking and Dana's saying, no, I'm not having a meeting, there's nothing about that tone-wise or by the letter of the word that he says, I'm refusing to meet with Conor. There was nothing a part of that where he said, Conor has asked to meet with me. And unfortunately, we just can't get it worked out. There was nothing like that. What is it that those two would meet about? What do you think, though? I mean, Conor's come out and he's spoken publicly and he liked to go box and he liked to do these things over here. Okay, so are you asking me to amend the agreement? Do you have a boxing match? You're asking me to change the contract so that you can go and box. Do you have a boxing match? No. Okay, great. Then why am I amending it? Why am I even have this talk? Well, because I can try to get one. You can try to get one if I do you this favor, but you don't actually have one. So now I don't know when you're going to fight. Fight for them, fight for me. I know less things. My world got more confusing. Why would that be a meeting that I would want to show up to? would that be a meeting I would want to agree to? Now, I'm not suggesting for you that any of those things happen. Conor McGregor himself only mentioned that he's in Las Vegas. He did not say that he went over to the UFC, that he checked in with reception, that he waited in the lobby, and that Dana refused to come out and see him. He didn't say that he reached out to Dana by text message, phone call, or through a third party, tried to get a meeting together. Now he's going to land in Vegas and just hope it comes about. He didn't say anything of the sort. But Conor and Amanda Nunes are in some way playing the same game. And Dana was asked about her as well. In fact, Dana said, I don't know if she's serious about coming back to fight. I think she just might be teasing the idea. And that was open for interpretation, right? Because you have the tease. That's what you do with the audience. Before you throw to a commercial break, you tease something and then you say, we'll be right back. There's a tease. And then you have, I was kidding. There was no sincerity. I was just fooling. You have that as well. So it's a little bit open for interpretation, but much like the Conor Dana one, I'm going to give you my interpretation, which is that Dana meant tease, just joking around. When Amanda says she's going to come back, she's just teasing. She's just having fun. It's not being taken literal. She's not re-entering the pool. She's not got a conversation with our legal and they're going to amend her contract. That's how I interpret it. And it doesn't save it from being less annoying. Because we, the audience, are owed something, right? If we're going to come talk about these fighters and we're going to support and celebrate these fighters, when we're given information from the fighters, it is very reasonable that our one expectation is that we are given the right to rely on the information that they gave us. So what do you want to do here? Amanda Nunes, within her piece, was lip-syncing. She was having fun. But she looked so darn good. I mean, that's the part you can't get away from. She was fit. She's in shape. She got there somehow and for some reason. But you set that aside and you focus back in on the words, which was her screwing around to a lip-sync. But she did ask for Dana to call me. And that's the part that kind of ties in with Conor. Dana has never turned on Conor, and Conor has never turned on Dana, and we have never seen in this organization the inability to get business done where one side didn't let the world know their frustration and who was holding it up. And then there's two sides to every story, so they will generally come and do that back. Dana has never turned on Conor, not in tone, not in body language, never. And neither is Conor, but Conor has said that there's been a communication breakdown between him and the UFC. He asked if the Sheik would help to facilitate a conversation. I don't believe that. I don't believe if Conor was coming to town and wanted a meeting that he couldn't get one. I don't believe that Dana, who's in that office nonstop, if Conor came in and was in the lobby and waited for him like other people do, that Dana would have him in. I don't believe that. I don't believe those two should ever need to have a meeting, considering there's already contracts in place. It ought to be able to, for speed, with a text and a phone call. I mean, you got to understand, the UFC comes to a screeching halt if the boss has to talk to each guy before each fight. If the boss has to negotiate and renegotiate each and every time before each fight, it comes to a screeching halt. I've got to have contracts in place. 3, 5, 6, 8, whatever, so that I don't have to talk to you again. It's all done right now so that I can move, right? I got 756 of you under contract. I don't have 756 hours in the day. I feel as though I'm stating the highly obvious, but it's not. Francis Ngannou was heavyweight champion, and Francis told the UFC, we'll talk before each fight. Before each fight, let's talk. And he couldn't figure out why that was unacceptable. It wasn't personal against Francis. It wasn't something against the heavyweight division. It wasn't because the UFC got tired of selling out arenas, making money. There's not time in the day. I cannot sit down with you before each fight because you're going to want rewarded and bumped each fight, and I'm never going to go the other way with it. You're going to tell me you got to finish in the second round in your last fight and therefore this next one. but I'm not going to tell you it never should have been in the second round. I'm not going to tell you that that first completed round you lost. I'm not going to tell you that two fights ago, your numbers were the lowest in heavyweight history. Because it's rude. I sign the contract. I'll sign the check. We're not going to talk before each match. I'm just sharing with you. I think you're misunderstanding. But I do think the theme that is shared by Connor and Amanda, which is, hey, Dana, when you're ready to do business, give me a call. That's not the way this works. Former champions carry clout, and they have a respect. They're both clearly welcome to fight again. Amanda, more than any other athlete that's ever left, Khabib and GSP would probably be in the same category, but more than any athlete that's ever left, could most certainly come right back because she didn't get beat. And I'm telling you that because we know that to be true about Connor. Evident of the fact that he just had a signed agreement, a sold-out arena for $27-plus million against Chandler. Pulled out. That gets extended. When do you want to do it? Those things don't need to be done in a meeting. What to do with Nick Diaz for that question, right? For that matter, Nick is, so we're told, okay, under contract with the UFC. But under contract, by the way, when I use that term, I don't just mean that you haven't fought out your contract yet or you haven't been released. I really don't mean that. When I say it, I am talking about an expectation of activity and an availability of activity. UFC has a number of fighters that are under contract, but they're ineligible. Just so you understand. So I'm not counting those. Let me give you a great example. When I say that Nick Diaz is under contract with the UFC, not only do I mean that he legally and exclusively has a binding agreement with WMEING. That's not what I mean. I mean, he's in the pool. He's being tested. The organization and the leadership of the organization are actively seeking matches for him. They're looking at dates. They're playing the game. He's part of meaningful activity. That's what I mean when I say it. Because Nate Diaz is in a little bit of a different spot. Where Nate is for... And by the way, to go back to Nick, we don't know for sure if he's going to fight again. Boxing, MMA, we don't know for sure. But it looks like it. Like the wind is blowing. Nick's in there, he's on the heavy bag, he's showing people he's training, he looks good, but we don't know it. We do know that Nate wants to fight again. We also know that Nate is not in the pool because he is not under contract because he fought it out. That was his fight with Ferguson, and Nate wanted to do other things, and he went and did them. He went and boxed a couple of different times. He went and had those experiences. He tried his hand at stuff, but I think he liked the organization of the UFC. I don't mean the UFC as a company, like that kind of organization. I think he really liked logistically how well the UFC was at getting you from this place to this place in a comfortable manner. And when you get to the second place, knowing, okay, over here I go to the lobby, I then get into a car, I then go to this event, which will take me back to a car, which will bring me. I think he liked that. I think he kind of liked what it, some things he looked at as a machine. I think he now views as a well-oiled machine. But your perspective has changed, right? The way you see it and the way you look at it. I share that because what do you do with Nate? People can't call out big fights without talking about him. Dustin Poirier can't complete a full interview without at some point mentioning his desire to whip Nate's ass. I mean, it just comes out of Dustin. You have George Masvidal, who is under contract, I believe is in the pool, got a carve out to go and compete in the boxing with Nate, but now would like to come back into MMA. And I think for the same reasons. I think that George Masvidal really liked the organization. Here's what I do. Here's when I'll do it. Here's what we're going to ask you to do. And here specifically is how you're going to do it. I think he liked that. Right. All the stuff that he one time saw as a job when he went. What's the old expression, guys? the grass is greener on the other side of the fence until you have to jump that fence and mow it. So I just think that these guys are back. I want to be. I think they're happier. They want to be. I also think that they fall no fault of their own, slip into a category. Same category that JLP's in. Which is, we're not building and signing and promoting guys in this demographic, which is a nice way of saying age. We're looking for guys that are younger. And if we bring you guys, we acknowledge what you should be paid. And we acknowledge your ability to swing the needle, meaning you deserve to be paid. And we acknowledge card placement because you're stars. But that's checkers. Chess, and for long-term ROI, which is the fiduciary responsibility that we have to the people that believe in us, we can't give those time slots to you anymore. That's what I think. I think it's a big push and pull. I would like the idea. It's very hard to get away from branding. It's one of the things that Dana has done so well. This organization, only the best fight the best. The only people that fight here are champions and contenders, which means as soon as you show that you cannot be champion, as soon as you show and demonstrate there is not a day or a way or a path to a championship, you are no longer fighting here. And Dana has been so locked into that brand promise and that identity. But I must tell you, there is something to be said for nostalgia. I wouldn't mind if we called the show Nostalgia, and we did that for an entire event. The UFC did something like this with heavyweights. Did you guys ever see this? Their entire main card was only heavyweights. It was awesome. It was awesome, but they didn't build it that way. They didn't promote it that way. We had to like figure that out on our own. We had to stand back and like, oh my God, it's the Night of the Giants. It's the Goliaths. It's all these different things. There was all these weight marketing, but the UFC never officially said it because that's not who they are. That's not what they do. They don't do spoofs. They don't do anything gimmicky. And I think there's a little room for it. I do. Imagine we call it Nostalgia. Call it a number of things. But imagine that it was all that we had. We had Nick Diaz. We had Nate Diaz. We had George Masvidal. Dustin Poirier is red hot as he is. He's approaching where he said, yeah, I'm just going to do one more. There is so many guys that we can look at that are so coveted that want to do this, that are training, that are in shape, that are fit and ready to go. And Dustin Poirier, ranking rise, I get that he's ahead of everybody else, but he's the one saying, I'm going to do one more and I'm going to say goodbye. It's not that far off till we get there with Conor McGregor. We might already be there. He might have already made his last walk. Michael Chandler is young and hungry and all these things that he is. He's slipping into this demographic. And I don't think these are bad things. Again, it's the same one that I sit in. I'm just sharing for you. I think there is something that can be done there. I think there's something special and something that could be fun. And right when we thought it could never happen, George Masvidal had already been told, we are not bringing you back because of your age. Like right when that already happened and trickled through our industry and we all start to figure out what we're going to get and what we're not going to get. What we should put our energy behind as fans and save the sweat. Right when all that goes down is when we find out the Nick Diaz information. That's when we find out that Nick is coming back and he's going to take on Luque. And Nick is a little further into that demographic than his younger brother or his nemesis, George Masvidal, or of course, coming down, Dustin Poirier, Michael Chandler, Conor McGregor. So if it can be done for him, maybe it can be done. And even if it's not the thing that the UFC, excuse me, loves to do, maybe it's being done on a favor. Fair enough, it's still getting done. So why don't we just get this all out of all of our systems? Why don't we make a night of it? Let's just get this one night. Let's appease everybody that keeps asking for it. And let's have a little bit of fun. I don't know that that is going to get off the ground, guys. But it could. I think with a little bit of support, I think what got Nick back was nothing more than his tribe, his loyal group pointing their cannon in the same direction. And they just kept firing until finally they were told, okay. So what do you think of it? Am I off on this? Am I wrong on this? Dustin Poirier wants to do a tournament. He wants to do a tournament with Justin Gaethje. And he would like Max and Ilya Topuria to be part of it. In fact, he thinks that tournament is playing out right now. No problem calling out a 45-pounder for the BMF belt. Come on up. Let's all get this situated. Like, those are fun. And those are some real killers. It's not like you're asking for something easy. But that idea isn't going to work. Why? Well, it's not fully polished. But that doesn't mean Dustin, he's got the right tool, but maybe by the wrong end. So what would you do? If you had a night of legends, you had all these guys that wanted to come back, and they're healthy, and they're serious, and they're in shape, and you had that ability, would you find a way? Would you get it done? Even in one night? Or will we just let it die and pass? And it's one of those lessons learned and something we'll look back on in the future and think what could have been, but we didn't do it. Ilya Topuria has challenged Max Holloway to throw down right in the center of the octagon, and he wants it within the first 10 seconds of the fight. Okay. Ilya is starting to warm me up, okay? I go back, first time I hear about him is from my partner Ryan Parsons, who's watching something live and calling me and saying that Patty the Batty and some other guy on the card are throwing water bottles at one another, and then Patty nicknames the guy Mr. Water Bottle, or it might have been hand sanitizer. In fact, I think it was. I think what Ryan thought was a water bottle, I think we looked closer because it was clear. I think it was hand sanitizer, which, by the way, Mr. Hand Sanitizer as a nickname is a lot better than Mr. Water Bottle. Can we agree? But Ryan and I had the same conclusion, which is whoever this guy that's getting into it with Patty the Batty is going to find himself released if Patty the Batty does not perform, if he hurts him. There was a time. And you guys all would have seen this, but if you see it now, it is one of the great clips in MMA. It is Conor McGregor face-to-face with Cody Garbrandt on the set of The Ultimate Fighter. And Cody, he just needs a little bit. He needs so much as a blink. So much as a blink, and this thing is on, and they are chest-to-chest. But when I say what a great clip that is now, at the time that was done, we didn't know what a Cody Garbrandt was. I don't believe Cody had even debuted in the UFC at that point. I could have that wrong, but never on a main card. That 100% right. Never a ranking, never a contender. And the folks that run the show, Craig Piligian himself informed Uriah Faber. Cody Garbrandt was there with Uriah. If that guy does that again, something that where it's clear that he wants and is willing to touch Conor McGregor, he's gone. Well, but it's true. Of course it would be. That's a commodity, right? They're making a show that they're going to take to the market. That's a commodity. So the idea that you could injure the commodity that the show is being named after, right? McGregor versus Faber. So I bring that because it wasn't that far off when Ryan and I were speaking, and Mr. Hand Sanitizer, we didn't know how to pronounce Ilya Topuria. Like, even if we had the name, we didn't know his name, but when we find the name and we're looking at it, we didn't know how to pronounce it. Then we looked him up, and it seems to make things even worse for this Ilya Topuria guy, whoever that is. It turns out he's not even in the weight class with Patty the Batty. So this whole thing is a complete and colossal waste of time. But as we keep reading about this guy, then we've already learned his name. So we didn't know his name. He was Mr. Sand Hand Sanitizer. Now we know his name. It's Ilya Topuria. But as we keep looking, it turned out at that time, he was 12-0. Okay, great. Well, we just learned a couple of pretty important things about this guy. So then we follow him the next night. Now, we're only watching the next night because we want to watch Patty, who was the star of the show, but we're watching and we're going to check out Ilya Topuria, which by the end of the night turned into 13-0. Okay. So all of a sudden, you're kind of paying attention. And it all had to do with a face-off and a press conference type situation. And Ilya Topuria then has slowly got into this role. And it looked like he was willing to go down the dark path if that was the one to start him. But some of the ads and some of the marketing that they did with him, they put him in really fine suits. and they'd have really good lighting. And somebody would come in, they'd do his hair just right. And all of a sudden, you're looking at Mr. Hand Sanitizer, and you're going, hey, you know what? You're a good-looking guy. So then all of a sudden, they start surrounding him. Beautiful girls, of which I believe is his actual girlfriend. And then all of a sudden, he's doing like a higher class of shows. And he ends up in some kind of a montage with Volkanovsky, where it's like a love letter. Like, now it's all bent and twisted because these guys are going to cage fight, but it was done from like this romantic, this real Don Juan, a real suave type character, which is totally different than the big mouth with the unknown name and the unknown record throwing water or hand sanitizer at Patty the Batty. Like, everything makes this vast turn. Then you get Teddy Atlas comes out talking about Ilya Topuria, says this guy is the best boxer in MMA, not just right now. He is the best boxer I have ever seen in MMA, end quote. That's Teddy Atlas. Now, Teddy made that comment prior to Topuria fighting Volkanovski. Like, coming out of that fight, you could see where you'd come to that conclusion, right? Everything's short inside. Everything's nice and short. Everything's clean. Get in, get out. But Teddy had already seen it. Teddy had seen it in some of these undercard matches when he was doing his research and studying up on it. And for Topuria to ask Max Holloway to come to the center of the octagon and throw down. Okay. I mean, it's just gold. It's just gold. I was training my dog. Stay with me on this. I was training my dog. I couldn't get my dog to do anything. I could not get him to do anything. So what I would do is I would wait until he was doing something, and then I would tell him to do it. Like, if he was walking to the door, I'd say, walk to the door. And then I'd tell my wife, I'm like, can you believe this? Can you believe how well I've trained this dog? Or he comes over and he jumps on the couch. And just as he's jumping on the couch, I say, jump on the couch. And I look at my wife and go, can you believe this? What a master trainer I am. And it turned into a bit of a joke, but I stole that routine from Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali had a fight on a Saturday night. It was out of the country. I think it was the Rumble in the Jungle, but either way, it was out of the country. He's to return home the next day. That's just how travel works. You fight on a Friday, you go home on Saturday. You fight on a Saturday, you go home on Sunday. And Muhammad Ali stated, if I lose to this man, I will return to America tomorrow. And you see where that's great? You see where that's great? Because he was going home anyway. And I'm only sharing this with you. Like, if you stay with me on this process from when the great Muhammad Ali did it to where I borrowed that, and did it to my dog that I could not contain. He's now telling Max, who does nothing but stand up and trade with people. The entire idea of come meet me right here and trade with me was done by Max when he reached down onto the octagon floor and drew a line, like it was a line in the sand, and tells Justin Gaethje, come cross that line, come step to the line, of which Gaethje did, and they throw it down. Topuria is telling Max, he's challenging Max to do the one thing we know Max is going to do. And when Max does it, he's now answering to the boss. Topuria has made himself the boss, the master, if you will. If you reference back to my example of doing it with my pet, the master. You're doing it because I told you to do it. Do you see where that's beautiful? I mean, do you really see where that's beautiful? Now think about it from Max's standpoint. Max doesn't have a lot of options here. He can accept that challenge, or he can refuse the challenge. But what if he does refuse the challenge, but it's what he actually wants to do? Now, if he does it, Topuria's got him thrown off his game. If he does do it, Topuria's pulling his strings. Are you with me on this? Do you understand? Because the greats don't get there on accident. Sean O'Malley did not wake up one day and become a star. Alex Pierre, who's doing the kickboxing, isn't what made him a star. You don't have the headdress. You don't show up those weigh-ins. You don't have charm. You don't have the stone face. You don't have stopping partway through. You don't have a star. You might have a champion. Big difference. And I'm sharing for you how much strategy goes into Ilya's thought. I don't know. But you would have to agree right back to me. There is no chance that Ilya Topuria thinks he's going to have to bait and switch and massage and dangle a carrot to maneuver to get Max to step in the middle of the octagon and start trading with him. That is for sure exactly what Max is going to do. And that is what makes this my favorite line of the week. That is Jake Paul's guarantee or his projected purse. I gotta tell you, I kind of had a hard time figuring this out, but to take on Mike Tyson, and you know what, guys? It's probably what we would have guessed. We'd have probably guessed somewhere right in there. And there's something about money that is fascinating, almost because it's one of those forbidden things. Like, you know, you and your buddies don't get together and start talking about how much people are making. But it doesn't mean you're not curious. And so it is kind of one of these interesting things, and the large narrative on why Mike Tyson would do this has been money. That's a narrative. I don't know if I buy that, but I have been curious. So if Jake Paul is to get $40 million, what do you guys think? Who's the A side? Who's the B side? I mean, one thing in boxing that would be really fair is if they just split it. Some people have argued that in MMA, if you just split it. You know, there's this much purse for this event. Instead of breaking up your show and my show and the win bonus versus the win bonus, let's just get split right down the middle. And it never works out that way. It just never does. Somebody always believes they're the A side. They want to be looked at in that manner. I do believe you could have Jake Paul fighting, and it wouldn't have to be Mike Tyson, but I must admit, of all the ideas for Jake Paul, that's the most intriguing to me. All right, let's switch them. Jake Paul's out, Mike Tyson's in. Are there other people that Mike could have fought that would have captured your interest? Sure. But when Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield, this is coming right off the backside of Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr., which 95% of people, including those who watched it, believe Mike Tyson won. Oh, by the way, I'm not questioning the judges' scorecards. The way people remember it was that Mike Tyson won. It was officially a draw, which was the right call. That's not the part being disputed. It just always felt like a win for Tyson. Always. He came back and he showed us and he held up and he got really tired and he pushed through it and he tried to win in the last round as much as he was trying to win in one and two. It was one of these things where he was really the one that came out of that. Instant talks for what's next for Tyson captivated the headlines. There was not a discussion on what was next for Roy. Where does Roy go after that showing? And by the way, Roy's the one whose back was up against it. He was the one that was given up the size. So it should have been a massive win for Roy. By example, I think stock rising the most just from this past weekend, what we saw is Khalil Roundtree. That's what I think. From wherever Khalil was, whatever you thought he was capable of doing, or wherever you thought he belonged in that division since he's ranked number 8, I think any, whoa, right? Like whatever's next for Khalil, we can almost guarantee it's going to be something very big. Probably Jamal, possibly Yuri, but all of a sudden, those are real feature matches. And coming out of Roy Jones and Mike Tyson, it didn't seem to go that way. It seemed to go towards Mike. And there was talk of $20 million for Tyson versus Holyfield. And I think that you could have justified it. Now, at that time, that's before Holyfield had returned. That's before having the benefit of seeing what you saw, Holyfield versus Vitor. And it would seem as though that would be the biggest possible comeback match that the world would have to offer. And the number was $20 million, and the promoters couldn't come up with it. They couldn't justify it. So here we are in a situation where the loftiest number that ever got mentioned for a fight that felt like would have been the most captivating, Holyfield versus Tyson. Here we are with Jake Paul, nowhere near the weight class, nowhere near the past, nowhere near the storyline, double the money. Do you believe it? It's a real interesting one. It's a real, real interesting one. Jake Paul has been as honest with the audience as any boxer I have ever seen, including basically an apology to Espinoza somewhere along the way for the lack of interest in Bill to the Tyron Woodley rematch. And it wasn't quite an apology, but Jake owned it. All the way down to being embarrassed and having to return the funds and sitting on $1 million gate at Madison Square Garden for himself versus Tommy Fury. And I just share that with you because if Jake comes out and says $40 million, like, well, okay, I can't find it. I can't find it or see where that's at, but I am wildly curious if that is accurate. There won't be a pay-per-view structure, or at least not like you're used to with a pay-per-view structure. But Netflix knows about buying content. They know about what to do with these things and where to move it. Somebody who's promoting this has booked Jerry's World. Conor McGregor said it himself. What in the heck are they doing there? And it is just one of these things where you have to know in hindsight, Jake Paul having a guarantee of $40 million. Now, the whole question is, do we believe it? Jake Paul is representing that. He is the producer. They are the producers, and they've taken, they're going to sell this to Netflix. I mean, that's what Oprah did, right? Like, that's what you do when you get really rich. The problem is, if you do that, you don't have a guarantee. You don't, in life, get to keep all of the good on the back end and then can guarantee I'm going to get $40 million. If you're the one, somebody's writing you a check, then they're the one to keep it. I don't know where the $40 million would come from. Now, overarching, I'm always trying to learn something. And the business side of combat is a very fascinating thing. And I would like to know who's getting more, because the egos are the ones that get in the way of this. Like, I think that Jake Paul is actually a true competitor, unlike you guys give him credit for. And I think, wow, Mike Tyson, I'm going to get to do something with him. Whether it's compete with, have a chance to beat, actually box. Like, it wouldn't really matter if you had somebody interested in combat, specifically boxing, from that generation of Jake Paul. Anything you can do with Mike Tyson, what a cool thing. But not necessarily for Mike. Mike isn't looking about it thinking, oh, first ever fight on Netflix. He's not looking at it thinking, oh, I'm going to go into Jerry's World. He's not looking at it saying, ah, that kid that was the Disney star, now he does good numbers on YouTube. Well, I can't wait to align with him. It's not like that. And I do know that egos get in the way. And while Mike might be completely fine getting, make numbers up, getting $10,000, he could be completely fine with that. If he finds out the opponent is getting $15,000, all of a sudden he's not okay with it. Like, that emotion is an extremely real thing. Anytime in life you start counting the other guy's money, the relationship isn't going to work. So knowing that that is the culture that Tyson comes from, if Jake is getting $40 million, I can assure you Mike is getting more than $40 million. Should we just call it a wash, guys? Should we just say they're both getting the same thing? Okay, you got $80 million going in. When I was in sixth grade, Miss Eiler's classroom, I read on a paper that she supplied, the biggest heavyweight title fight of all time and biggest by money and purses of all time was an Olympic champion named Michael Spinks versus an Olympic hopeful named Mike Tyson, who didn't make it. But Tyson did go and become a world champion in the pros, and Spinks did the same thing, but from down a weight class. Spinks is moving up. The Olympic hero, the unbeaten world champion Spinks, is moving to step two. The hottest prospect in boxing, Mike Tyson. You want to know what that did? $29 million. Now, I was in that classroom in 1988. If I'm wrong, it was 87. You know how the school year goes. I understand inflation. I understand that things have changed. But here's what I am going to tell you. If you had taken even Mike Tyson, who was the highest paid fighter in the world in the biggest fight of all time, and told him at 58 years old, that's the day that he's going to come back and break this record, he would have asked some questions like, well, I bet that guy will also be Olympic champion. I bet that guy will also have been undefeated. I bet that guy will also have been a multiple-time world champion. And if they go, no, it's none of those things, but he's really famous and there's something called the internet. It's just a conversation that Mike Tyson that faced Michael Spinks would not be able to have with this Mike Tyson that's going to face Jake Paul. And it's a wildly different time. And I find the money fascinating. I really do. And if Jake Paul is getting 40, I assume Mike is getting more than 40. And I would like that to be confirmed or verified. And it's one of the reasons you always got to be careful what you read. Because if Mike isn't getting more than 40, ego-wise, it's going to become a huge problem. And that's not a mistake that Jake Paul would put out. But he would put a big, beautiful number justifying the vent in form of promotion. So what are you going to believe? Who are you going to believe? What information's real? Who do you get your information from? All right, everybody, I have had it with you all. That's it for today's episode, but I do want to thank you for listening. I got to give a shout out to Brad. Now, Brad went over to Apple Podcasts. He left me a review. Check that out. My wife says, I have a man crush on Chael. I don't know, but when the true American gangster speaks, I listen. Love the podcast. Well, thank you, Brad. I appreciate that compliment. I think there was one from the missus as well. Thank her on my behalf. Guys, it's been fun. It's been real. It's even been real fun. Enjoy your weekend. Come back on Tuesday, everybody. I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.